makes us aware of God moving among us and who we are in Him. And I would say to you that that is that praying for one another is the most important thing that we can do. I literally 3 minutes ago, this verse came on my heart, and so I want to share it with you. Ecclesiastes chapter 4. Ecclesiastes chapter 4, if you have your Bibles or your phones or whatever, if you want to pull it up, or Evan, you can type it in and throw it up on the screen if you want to. You know, Ecclesiastes, Solomon says, there's nothing new under the sun. In other words, you know, there... generations come and go, and people don't seem to change. I mean, they kind of have the similar experiences over and over and over again. And so, you know, it gives us an idea of God's perspective. You know, there He is, and He's looking down, and He's like, yeah, you know, I've been on this ride before. When we had our daycation, we went to Silver Dollar City, and we went to the, was it the powder keg? Where's Kathy? Oh, there, was it the powder keg? You guys talked to that guy who had ridden the powder keg? The what? The Outlaw, this new roller coaster. This guy had ridden it like 160 times or something. Have I told you this about this guy? If you could picture him, it's not what you'd imagine. He's what, like 60 years old? And he didn't have any teeth. I don't know that that's related at all to the number of times he's ridden this ride. But it was something. Do you remember exactly how many times he rode it? Times in one day. So he's been on that roller coaster before. Knows every bit about it, every turn, every jolt, every... I don't know how he could do that. But you just think, are you really? I mean, doesn't it get old after a while? 160 times in a day or something? 60 times in one day. Wouldn't that get old? There's nothing new under the sun for God. It's like, yeah, I've ridden this roller coaster 160 times. There's nothing more you can tell me or show me. There is nothing new under the sun. Your experiences are the same. And he's infusing Solomon with this understanding, with this wisdom. So Solomon, this is what he says. Again, I looked and saw all the oppression. Now, when I click on this word and I see defined, prolonged, cruel, and unjust treatment or control. That's how we define oppression. I looked and I saw all the oppression that was taking place under the sun. Now, it's interesting how he describes the oppression as we continue on. I saw the tears of the oppressed. And they have no comforter. Power was on their side; was on the side of their oppressors, and they have no comforter, So there's all of these people who are there's no contentment, there's no comfort for them, because there's these things there, or these individuals, or these circumstances that are just oppressing them, and it's almost cruel, especially from God's perspective. Verse 2, and I declared that the dead who had already died are happier than the living who are still alive. I mean, how does one get to that point? It would be better for me to be dead. There's that much lack of comfort. But better than both is the one who's never been born. Boy, this is a cheery dude. Who's not seen the evil that is under the sun. Listen to how he describes some of the oppression. I saw that all toil and all achievement spring from one person's envy of another. This is meaningless. It's a chasing after the wind. So here, from God's perspective, I mean, he's enlightening Solomon in this understanding. Here's what I see, generation after generation after generation. What's compelling people is there are people who have what they don't have. That's what's motivating them. And toil and achievement, they spring from a person's envy of another. And this is meaningless. There's no purpose in that. There's no meaning in that. There's no joy. You will not find comfort in trying to have because other people have. I've seen it over and over again. It's meaningless. That's what God is saying through Solomon. Fools fold their hands and ruin themselves. So even that, just giving up and quitting, well, that doesn't work. Better one handful with tranquility than two handfuls with toil and chasing after the wind. So I've watched this go round and round and round, and I've seen this generation after generation, and those that are being motivated to have because other people have. Here's what's better. Better to not have and to be at peace. Better to have less and to be at peace. That's what I would tell you after 60 times riding a roller coaster in one day. Better to have less and to be at peace than to try to keep up. Again, I saw something meaningless under the sun. I mean, here's this oppression. You see, because the oppressor in our society would be the one that says, you got to have, you got to keep up, you're falling behind. Oh, you don't have that? Oh, you don't have, well, Shane's got the new iPhone. You don't have the new iPhone? You know, just an example. Where is Shane? Yeah, he's outside the room too. Where did he go? I gotta tease Shane a little bit. Again, I saw something meaningless under the sun. There was a man all alone. He had neither son nor brother. So there's nobody in his life. There was no end to his toil, yet his eyes were not content with his wealth. For whom am I toiling, he asked. Why am I depriving myself of enjoyment? This too is meaningless. Because what he was doing was he was working so hard and running so fast and working, and there was no one in his life. He was blown by the people to try to get two handfuls. And Solomon is saying, here's what God is saying. From his perspective, having ridden the roller coaster and watched the people ride it again and again, it's better to have less and see the people than to be alone. Because you weren't made for that. Two are better than one. It's always better with the people. Two are better than one. Because they have a good return for their labor. I mean, at the very basis, it just makes sense. I mean, it just makes sense. It's a lot easier. Two are better than one. They have better return for their labor. If either of them falls down, one can help the other. But pity anyone who falls and has no one to help them. I mean, as this chapter progresses, I mean, Solomon's really driving home this wisdom of could we get away from the busyness? Could we get away from the pursuit? And could we actually slow down and see each other? Because that's what we're made for. Pity anyone who falls and has no one. Also, if two lie down together, they will keep warm. I mean, it's like I can actually help you. I can help you to feel better. I can help you to be better. I can help you to have more. You don't have to live gold. We can be in this together. We have this statement. I don't know how if it's considered crude or not. They're in bed together. They're working together. And Solomon draws on that same metaphor, and he says that two can actually help things be better. Because when I'm discouraged, boy, I really need somebody with me. And when my heart's running cold, I really need somebody to help me feel what I don't know how to feel. But how can one keep warm alone? It was never meant to work that way. Though one may be overpowered, two can defend themselves. This is never more true than how the church is meant to help one another to keep from sinning. I mean, do you view church involvement as an opportunity to keep you from sinning? I mean, that's what he's saying. This is how it's designed. It's designed that we would protect, because I can be overcome by myself. But if I'm with someone, if they're helping me and I'm helping them, we can guard off, we can thwart the evil that would overtake us. Two can actually do it. But who can do it by themselves? A cord of three strands is not quickly broken. Now, in weddings, you've heard, and God is the cord. And that's a good metaphor. That there would be me, and there would be you, and then there would be God that just holds it all together. And that's great. But, I mean, but what if there's a cord of four? Would that even be stronger? I mean, what about a cord of five or six or seven or eight? The bridge that goes over the river that divides Dundee and Fife in Scotland. Actually, it's not that bridge. It's the one by Edinburgh. It has these huge cords. The Walt Whitman Bridge, we used to go over from New Jersey to Pennsylvania. Same thing. These huge, massive cords that hold this big suspension bridge. And you just think, first of all, I hope those don't break. But you just think how much power those things have to hold up all those cars and all that weight. And I mean, the more there is, the stronger it can be. And so Solomon is encouraging. So why would we blow past each other? Why would we do that? I mean, by yourself, you're really struggling by yourself. Two's good. I mean, you can stay warm. You can ward off evil. You know, if you fall, somebody's there to pick you up. You can really do well. A cord of three, now you've really got something going on. I mean, you could even almost call that a team. If you're playing basketball. I had no idea I was going to say any of this. But this is church. And from the God who sits from a place who sees generation after generation, he would tell when the guy who prays to God and says, God, if you would, I want to know the most important things. Ask me for anything. Solomon says, I want to know the most important things. I want wisdom. Okay. Here's one of the most very important things I could tell you, Solomon. It's the people in your life that matter. That's what matters. You boil it all. It is better for you to be hungry and to be with someone than to be all alone and totally stuffed. It's always been about the people, Solomon. Write it down and remember it. And so church is about getting that right. Church is about understanding what that means and how that actually plays out. That's what we're doing. So I started looking at, you know, last week, just kind of trying to remind us what are we doing here and how we're, you know, we're drawing each other to God. We're in this together, and we're drawing one another to God. We're trying to have, you know, what we looked at last week was Romans 15. It says, may the God who gives endurance and encouragement give you the same attitude of mind toward each other that Christ had. So just taking Ecclesiastes 4 and laying over top of that idea, Jesus' attitude is, when he saw other people, that's what matters. I mean, he was able to penetrate through all of the pressure and the culture and all of those things. And he was able to see a person. And we love the stories, you know, the one who comes in out of the shadows and starts wiping his feet. I mean, that's just embarrassing for everybody. But Jesus is in the moment able to see, no, this is actually the most important thing that could happen this evening. Kind of like being on a trolley. So having the same attitude of Christ is having that perspective always, continuously. It's the people that matter, and understanding that I need to order and shape things in my life to make sure I don't lose that focus. And the oppression of our culture in this place and many places around the world, it's like this strange form of self-imposed torture. Where we're saying life would be so much better if we just what we're doing is we're disintegrating our families. We're teaching our kids that the best thing that you can do is leave home and go off and establish yourself. And don't live the rest of your days with mom and dad. Live all the way on the other side of the country. That's what I do. That's what I do. Who told me that? Who told me that it would be better for me to live in Oklahoma and for my parents to live in Delaware? That's just stupid. I see that now because my kids are getting ready to go. Before I know it. And I don't want the world to tell them you'll be doing better if you live halfway around the world from your parents. So we've already started telling them, go have fun, have adventures, you know, find yourself. And then after you find yourself, come back and show us who you are and live next door.
Amen.
I mean, the guy who's ridden the roller coaster again and again and again, he's saying, don't miss this, church. Don't miss this. If anybody could get it right, it would be the people who Jesus died for, that they would have the same attitude about each other that God has. Don't miss it. The question is, how do we do that? How do we make sure that we're experiencing this level of fullness that has to do with people? You know, we've said it means committing to trying to draw each other near to God, where, you know, we're trying to say to each other, hey, do you see God moving in you? Do you realize that that's God moving in your life, right? I mean, you do realize that, I know it seems like things are going crazy, but you do realize that God's like right next to you. I mean, language like, God sat down right next to me on the trolley. Who says that? Rhonda says that. That's good. Because that means, yeah, God really is alive and active, and he really is in my life, and we need each other. You see, when there's more than just you, somebody can bring that warm remembrance into your life and remind you when you can't remember yourself. And so we draw near to God together, and we hold on to that hope, and we remind each other that the context for our life is God. The foundation of our life is God. That's what we're building our life on. It's not about two handfuls. It's about God. and the truth that He's given to us, the hope that He's given to us. And so we build and we rest on His promises and we actively maintain that foundation for our life. We actively remember that. And so when we're having relationship troubles at home, or it's him and her, or it's mom and dad and them, or whatever it is, we're remembering. No, we're building our lives on the principles and on God. That's what we're building our lives on. And so covenant matters, and promises matter, and holding on matters. You know, maybe I should or shouldn't say, I don't know if I should say this, but I have to tell you, Bob and Debbie Mahaffey's battle has been terribly beautiful. I mean, it is just as ugly as can be in some senses, but it's just as beautiful as can be to say, you know what? What God has knit together, we have got to fight for to our dying breath. Because I built my life on the foundation of God. And so I hold unswervingly to the hope that we professed. And that battle has been, in one sense, very beautiful to me. And part of our life together is reminding each other of that. And where I had to stop last week, and I'm going to go just a little bit longer today because I don't want to stop again, is that we consider how to spur one another on. Do you know that that's what this is? I mean, you thought this was so that you could stay awake. I'm not going to drink that. I almost did. This is just about spurring one another on. That's all this is. It's like, okay, you know, what could we do to make sure that we're not just passing each other constantly? I mean, what could we creatively... let's consider this. Let's consider how we could spur one another on to love, to faith and to love, like the experience of love, like practicing it with each other kind of love. Like, what does it actually mean to give my life as a living sacrifice? It means that I would sacrifice for you. That's what it means. And so as we consider and we think, oh, I know what we could do. Let's have a movie night. Let's vote. Should we say God's not dead, or should we say heaven is for real? Heaven is for real? You think so? Out of the mouths of babes, that's right. And that's what the movie's about, actually. You know, here's the deal. I've seen this movie like 4 times. And I think I've only seen this one once. But I don't care. Because I'm not coming here to watch this movie. If I were coming here to watch this movie, I'd be going, shh, shh. Hun, I'm not here for you right now. Shh. Yeah, but I don't understand. Later! That kind of happens sometimes in the movie. I mean, they're good movies. But my vote is you. That's my vote. So have popcorn. Watch a movie. You know, chuck pumpkins from a trebuchet. It doesn't matter. Let's consider how we could spur one another on. I mean, to like really love and to really believe. In terms of our fellowship, I think this is perhaps the most significant statement in terms of Open Door. We are Open Door because we have decided to be. That's it. You know, when Open Door first started, I really struggled. Why are we starting another church on another street corner? Surely you've heard me say that. For years, that is not something that went away easily for me. Because my whole upbringing has, you know, whether it was in the Northeast or living overseas, most of my life has been, you are Christians and you are a fellowship of the people around you, because that's all there is. And in this culture, you can hop from one church to the other on a weekly basis, on a daily basis, if you want to. You know, and going and visiting other bodies or whatever, that in and of itself, there's nothing wrong with that. But we, here's what I came to understand. We are open door because we have decided to be open door. You know, Rusty drives here from Muskogee every week because he's decided to. And Laura has come because Rusty's decided to. No. I mean, are you understanding the weight of that statement? That is a statement of commitment. It's a statement of decision. I want to be involved in Hal's life because I've decided I want to be involved in Hal's life and Linda's life. And that has to mean something. It has to mean, it means that you are something different to me than the folks that I love and adore who worship right down the road. There's something more here. Now, you know, I love all of you. I don't love you like I love my wife, because there's something more there. I don't even know if that's exactly the right way to say that, but you understand what I mean. What I'm saying is we are open door because we have decided to be, because we decided that we are going to. I've decided I want to help Lisa draw near to God. I want to spend time with the Buchanans. I want to help them hold firmly to the hope that we have in Jesus Christ. I want to figure out, you know, creative ways to encourage the Hagans to continue in their faith and to love each other. I mean, maybe that looks like, you know, a commitment on a Thursday morning to just show up and have coffee. Do you know that we really don't talk about a whole lot on Thursday mornings? I mean, I've gone back and forth of like, you know, should I try to like inject some spiritual caffeine into this, or are we just here for the coffee and the iPhone discussions? No, we know that. We've kind of figured that out, haven't we? Decidedly, it's not the coffee. And then, you know what? Sometimes we would say it's a spiritual discussion, and other times it's just our spirits meeting up for coffee. It's just a creative way of, you know, considering how can I, like, practice loving these guys? I mean, it's like heavyweight training with them, but, you know... I'm kidding, of course. But we are open door because we've just, there's no other reason. Now, has God had a part in that? Yes. But we all raised our hand and said, yeah, yes, God. Thank you for inviting me. Thank you for bringing those people past in my path. And no, I don't want them to just pass by. So it looks like calling Don Rogers. It looks like having a move in. I mean, I just listed this stuff. It looks like sometimes Bible studies and small groups and coffees and phone calls and texts and saying, hey, let's go and serve pizza together side by side, or, you know, let's renovate a building together, or, you know, let's just sing happy birthday and never get it right, or whatever that's supposed to look like. Build a patio. I mean, that's creative. Hey, my tree fell down. Hey, let's love Star. Let's just go like build a thing for her. Okay. Let's haul a bunch of wood from one of our members' yards and let's dump it in another member's yard. That's cool. Because like we practice loving Luke and now my wife's really practicing loving me. I mean, let's just consider. I mean, that... it does boil down to some of that. And the encourage other, you know, encourage one another. I think it speaks to perseverance. I really do. I encourage one another as you see the day approaching. I mean, it's the holding on message that we have for each other. Hold on. Don't quit. Keep going. I'm still here. I'm still here. Charlie's still here. Joy and Joe, they're still here. Keep going. Stay faithful. Yeah, it's bumpy, but keep going. No, I wish I could fix it. I don't know how to fix it, but we'll keep going. Because we're holding on to what we know is true. And we know that God is right here sitting on us, next to us, maybe on us, I don't know, on the trolley ride. And so, you know, the Hebrew writer would say, don't give up making time for each other. Don't give up on that. Because as soon as you do, as soon as you allow the oppression of the culture to, you know, where you get all sucked into the two handfuls and the whatever else it is, and pass by each other, you're just falling into the same trap of every generation. And it doesn't have to be that way. You know, I wrote down here, it's not about attendance, it's about attending to one another. It's about attention. But you kind of have to, I mean, we got to be together in order to do that. So we're open door because we have decided to be. We're open door because we decided we are going to make room in our lives. That's what we've decided. And a cord of three, and a cord of four, and five, and six, and more. We're a lot stronger together. And every time, this is what Satan's going to do every time. Talked about it this morning. Every time, Satan is going to try to keep you away from the rest of us. Every single time. That's his number one trick. If you're married, his number one trick is, if I could just get him to quit talking. If I could just get him to, you know, one of them in the bed and one of them on the couch. Now, that's what I got to do. Divide and conquer. It's easy. Looking at each other is much, much harder. That's the problem. I dropped a student this week in the class I tutored on Fridays, and the mom said to me, well, maybe life will get better for you now. And I said, well, absolutely it will. Anytime I lose a person in my life gets so much easier. Because people are problems. I am a problem. But it's because of the problem that there's value. And God says, Solomon, tell him this. Tell them it's always about the people. And tell them that they can get out of the cycle. And tell my church, that's what I'm looking for from them. Because when they get that right, then they become like this beacon on a hill. And all of a sudden people come flocking and they're like, what's going on? And people are drawn because they have everything in common. You know, the particulars of all of these things are difficult. They're difficult. What do you say no to? We look at our lives at home constantly. What do we say no to? What do we say? We got to say no to something. What do we got to say no to? I don't know. I don't know those answers. They're hard. But I know I'm open door because I've decided to be. And God can help us with that. Let's pray together.